Live from KTLO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. What do you do when you've gathered enough signatures for a recall application? For the organizers of the campaign to recall Governor Mike Dunleavy, the answer is keep going. While they say the effort passed the minimum under state law, they're planning to go through early September. Alaska Public Media and KTLO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on why and what could happen next.
Recall campaign chair Mita DeWitt has two words for whether the group considered stopping at the minimum.
No way.
DeWitt says signature gatherers have heard an outpouring of concern about how the governor has done his job.
We have been able to collect 29,577 signatures. While that number by itself may not be impressive, the fact that we did it in 2 weeks is historical.
That's more than 1,000 more than the number required to start a review of the recall application by Director of the State Division of Elections, Gail Thanumiai. But the campaign plans to gather signatures through the end of the state fair on September 2nd. That will provide a buffer in case some signers gave incorrect information. Since the effort started on August 1st, Dunleavy has reversed his position on several line item vetoes that helped inspire the recall. But DeWitt says the changes won't deter the campaign.
It's not like it was an outlier, disenfranchised group over there. He did it to all of us. And we have a long memory.
DeWitt says that if Dunleavy again advances more than $300 million in cuts to public education, like he did in his original budget proposal in February, it would strengthen the recall campaign.
If he does provide cuts to K-12, it will just energize this movement further. But people want this to happen fast. They want him out of the office now. We do not want him to cause any more harm, and he would do us all a favor if he just resigned.
Once the campaign submits the application, Thanumiai will begin her review. She'll seek a legal opinion on whether the grounds for recall in the application hold up under state law. The law requires a recall to be based on lack of fitness, incompetence, neglect of duties, or corruption.
If this thing is not a valid recall, I don't know what is.
Scott Kendall is legal advisor to the campaign and was chief of staff to former Governor Bill Walker. Kendall says he and other lawyers reviewed the entire history of recalls in the state, as well as all of the related court decisions. For example, Kendall points to a veto by Dunleavy of court funding over decisions upholding the validity of Medicaid funding for abortions.
That sort of attack is, and the specificity of that attack is absolutely unprecedented. I've never seen something like that.
Kendall says the crucial question for the Division of Elections, and for the courts if it comes to that, is not whether Dunleavy should be recalled, but whether the listed grounds for recall are factual. And he says it won't make a difference that Dunleavy has reversed some of his positions.
As a legal prospect, you know, these actions we allege broke the law happened. They were consummated. So I think from a legal aspect, absolutely not. He hasn't mitigated anything.
Kendall says the campaign isn't slowing down after the veto reversals.
If someone only does the right thing under threat of recall, why would we believe he'll do the right thing if we let off?
For his part, Dunleavy has denied that his veto decisions have anything to do with the recall drive. Kenneth Jacobus is the former counsel to the Alaska Republican Party. While he hasn't done formal legal research against or for the recall, he's followed the process, and he's skeptical of much of the legal reasoning behind the recall. Jacobus says there's no question that Dunleavy had the authority to veto court funding, even if publicly linking it to abortion decisions was unusual.
I think it's tacky, but I can't say that it's illegal.
Jacobus predicts that Alaskans seeing the governor work with the legislature to close the state's budget gap will take the wind out of the sails of the recall effort.
If they want to defeat Dunleavy, they're going to have to do it at the next election.
The recall campaign plans to use the addresses it's gathered with the signatures on the application to mail the recall signers when it's time for the second stage, a petition that would require more than 71,000 signatures for the recall to be placed on the ballot. Campaign leaders expect the recall election to happen within a year. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has delayed signing the operating budget until next week. His signature is expected to accompany a number of line item vetoes for programs whose funding has since been restored by the legislature. On Friday, the governor's office said two programs Dunleavy previously eliminated now had his support. They are Online with Libraries, known as the OWL program, and Live Homework Help, which offers free remote tutoring for students. Alaska Library Association President Robert Barr says the roughly $810,000 in funding is crucial for digitally connecting Alaska.
Because one of the major things that the OWL program does is enable rural libraries to provide broadband internet connectivity to their communities. So that's probably the thing that I'm most excited about.
The OWL program shut down July 1st following the governor's veto, but a note on the state website Friday indicated that funding has been restored and would be back up soon. That'll make a difference in smaller, isolated communities. The daughter of a recently deceased Anchorage state senator, Chris Birch, says she has applied to fill his now vacant seat. Tally Birch Kindred, 37, says she made the decision after a discussion with her brother and mother last week following her father's death.
My brother doesn't live in the district. My mom, you know, would rather stab her eyes out with a pencil. I'm interested in the issues.
Birch Kindred works as an attorney for an oil company called Oil Search. A linguist renowned for his work with Alaska Native languages has died. Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports Michael Krause died Sunday, a few days before his 85th birthday. A son, Isaac Krause, confirmed his father's death. Krause was a professor emeritus at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He founded the Alaska Native Language Center in 1972, and the university named its Alaska Native Language Archive, a component of the center, for him. Krause documented conversations with the last surviving speakers of EAC. He advocated for preserving endangered languages and created a map of Alaska Native languages. The new animated children's television show, Molly of Denali, is the first national show to feature an Alaska Native lead. Some of the show's creators came to Juneau this month. As part of their visit, they put on a vocal acting workshop to help local kids find their own voices. KTOO's Zoe Gruskin has more.
Joel Price says he didn't really know what his father had signed him up for.
Just meeting some fancy people.
Those fancy people included the creative producer of Molly of Denali, Princess Dajai Johnson, and the voice of Molly herself, Sovereign Bill. For the record, Price says they weren't actually very fancy at all, just really nice. Price was one of 13 kids in the workshop on self-expression and voice acting. It was held the day before a community screening of the show in Juneau. Both events were organized by the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. KTOO provided the space for the workshop. Johnson kicked things off with some energizing warm-ups.
And everybody reach for the stars. And turn around. Get on your tippy toes. Stretch, stretch, stretch. And let it all out.
Once everybody was good and stretched, Johnson and Bill talked about their work and then walked through the basics of vocal acting. The kids got to put it into practice right away, recording some public service announcements, which you might hear on KTOO. That was Isadora, or Izzy, Kaiser's favorite part of the afternoon.
I thought I would stutter or lisp or mumble or something like that, and I actually surprised myself that I didn't do any of that in the entire recording, and I thought I did kind of good.
12-year-old Kaiser is happy to see Molly of Denali on the air. The show takes place in a fictional village in interior Alaska. Molly and many of the characters are Athabascan. Kaiser hopes the show will broaden perspectives.
Not many people really acknowledge our culture. They think we live in like igloos with polar bears and penguins, but really, we don't.
Kaiser, who is Tlingit, has some ideas of her own for a kid's show set in southeast Alaska. The main character would be a grizzly bear, Kaiser's favorite, and it would feature other regional animals, like seals and wolves.
It would solve problems, like people in real life, and they would talk and stuff, and it would be cool.
Ideas like that are exactly what the workshop's organizers hope to hear. Emily Edenshaw is Director of Business and Economic Development at Tlingit and Haida, and she helped put together the event.
There are 13 youth today. If one of them gets the tiniest bit of hope that maybe I can do this or I want to do this, this is why I do the work that I do.
Edenshaw, who is Yupik and Inupiaq, says she's been watching Molly of Denali at home with her kids. It's a powerful experience, she says, watching as a family.
Being a 35-year-old woman and I'm having the same experience as my 9-month-old daughter and my 13-year-old, my kids are never going to grow up in a world where they're not going to be able to see themselves represented.
After the workshop, Princess Dajai Johnson offered some short and sweet advice for any kids who want to get involved in the arts. Explore, have fun, and be curious. It's the kind of thing Molly of Denali might say. In Juneau, I'm Zoe Gruskin.
And finally, scientists have installed an underwater sound system they hope will reduce collisions between whales and ships in the Santa Barbara Channel off Southern California. The Los Angeles Times reports today that a listening station on the channel floor is able to capture whale calls as far as 30 miles away. That device is connected by cable to a buoy floating above that transmits data by satellite to scientists on shore. From there, captains can be alerted to slow their ships down. It's the latest attempt to prevent ships from running into whales in the channel, where cargo vessels in and out of the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach cross feeding grounds of endangered blue, fin, and humpback whales. The system is being tested and will fully launch in early 2020. Weather tonight, rain likely, lows in the mid-50s. Saturday, rain, highs in the mid-60s. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Friday, August 16th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Happy Friday.